Tango Tango Papa 2045, December 18, 2019.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Waco, Texas. So I am on my vacation. I told them that I needed to be home by the 15th of December. The vacation was supposed to begin on the 16th, but they ended up getting me home, I believe, on the 13th. So, got home a couple of days early, but be that as it may, going back to work on January 4th. So, when I got home, it was a good thing I got home a couple of days early. Let me scoot the chair around here. When I got home, I'm in a motel room in Waco, Texas, by the way. I'm driving on my way to South Texas, meet my parents down there, and then do exactly the same thing pretty much as I did last year. Hang out with them for kind of the duration of it, good chunk of it, and then come back to Arkansas. So, and then they're saying that they're going to follow me back. So, in any case, it's a good thing I made it home on the 13th. It was about 5 o'clock or something like that in the afternoon. And I discovered right away that my refrigerator wasn't running. So, I was able to flip a switch and get it to run. It's kind of a complicated thing to explain, but I've got a switch that I can flip, and it kind of changes the thing around a little bit, the plug that's the refrigerator plugs into. So got it running again. Fortunately, it hadn't been off that long. I have a thermometer in the freezer portion. It's kind of a side-by-side refrigerator freezer. So I have a thermometer in the freezer portion, and normally when it's running properly, it's minus 20, and it had warmed up to minus 10, so that's still not a problem. So I caught it in time before anything really had a chance to even melt. I soon discovered thereafter that part of the house didn't have any electricity. And so I immediately went to the breaker panel in the house, in the utility room, and flipped all the breakers, and that didn't seem to do anything or make any difference. And then, I don't know, a while later, all of a sudden, the electricity in the portion of the house where it had been off suddenly came on. And it stayed on for maybe the better part of an hour, and then it promptly went back off. No rhyme or reason. So, the next morning, that night I went ahead and called, and I called an electric company, electrician company that has electricians, and I didn't want to pay the emergency fee because I didn't really feel like it was an emergency. So I, of course, most of those electric companies, electricians, will answer their phone 20. They have someone set up to answer the phone 24/7. So I decided I would just wait until Monday when during their regular business hours and then make an appointment. So it actually ended up being whenever I called or she called me back, and then I missed the call, but I called her back at that electric company. You know, not the electric company, but, you know, the electrician place. She determined she had a slot Tuesday afternoon, which was, that was yesterday, I believe. So, in any case, in the meantime, Saturday morning, the electricity in that other part of the house came back on, and then it just stayed on. So it didn't go off anymore after that, and it was not related. I initially thought, well, maybe there's a problem with the breaker panel in the house, but it turns out that that wasn't the case. So they showed up about 1:30 in the afternoon yesterday, Tuesday, and what ended up happening, they looked at the breaker and they decided that there was no problem with the breaker or anything in the house. So the guy went out to the utility pole, and fairly quickly he was able to determine that, you know, you have what's called a meter loop on the utility pole, and that portion, you know, I'm responsible for. So, and he determined that that portion of it needed to be replaced. It had a problem, and it actually arced while he was, you know, kind of flipping it back and forth, the breaker, out on the utility pole itself. So, you know, the main cutoff. So, that had to be... that had to be replaced, and so it's kind of expensive, but you know, to have somebody do that, if you can do that work yourself, you know, buy the parts and put them, you know, assemble it and what have you, if you can do that yourself, you can save quite a bit of money, you know, because it's mostly ends up being labor. But nonetheless, I'm not really equipped to do that. Never, you know, I'm just not interested in doing that kind of stuff. And so, I just, you know, paid them to do it. And so they fairly quickly got the thing apart. And then, of course, as part of that, they had to call the, my electric company and have them come out and disconnect the service temporarily. So, you know, and then they had to go to wherever their parts supplier was and buy the appropriate parts to make a new meter loop. And then they brought it back and assembled it, and then they called the electric company back. But it was probably a good couple of hours by the time they came back, to reconnect, you know, kind of look at the new meter loop and reconnect it to the grid. So it was about 7 p.m. whenever the electricity was back on, and you know, I paid them and they were off on their way. So you know, the total price was a little over $2,400, but you know, it's kind of pricey, but on the other hand, have to have electricity. You know, it doesn't matter. Really, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how much it costs. So, and I really, you know, I didn't have any, you know, probably either one of my younger brothers or my dad could have assembled the meter loop. But be that as it may, you know, they weren't available, and I didn't, you know, and I don't really like kind of imposing on relatives for things like that. They weren't around anyways. None of them are around then, so they've all, you know, parents are all, you know, down in South Texas, and both of my younger brothers yesterday, of course, were at work. So, you know, I didn't even ask them, you know, so in any case, the thing is working again, and but it's kind of strange. I had, you know, you've got three wires typically that are coming off of your the meter loop into your house, and if something, you know, one of those wires gets messed up, then you can end up with a weird situation in the house where part of the circuits just won't work. You know, they may or may not work, and it can kind of be at random. So, because it's not making a good, not making a good connection, and actually, that's a potential fire hazard as well. You know, out on the meter loop itself. So, that's kind of taken care of. That was an old, you know, the thing's been there for, let's see, probably, let's see, since 95. So it's been there for 24 years. You know, so you know, I don't know how long that stuff should last. You know, it may or may not have sustain some sort of a lightning strike. I kind of doubt that. I guess it's possible that the grid lines might have got sustained a strike at some point. Yeah, that's always possible. But I think the thing just over time probably wore out, and that was that. And you know, so it just kind of became a little bit faulty, but you could kind of see that, near the breaker itself, that some of the insulation was melted, you know, maybe upwards of an inch of it. So if you see that and you're inside your box, then that's, of course, you don't ever want to touch anything, but if you don't know what you're doing with electricity, which I really don't, and don't want to know, don't have any interest in it. So, could if I wanted to, but sorry, I don't want to. But in any case, if you see, any kind of melted insulation, chances are you got a big problem, you know, and it probably needs to be replaced. Because, you know, you are, and it's using energy, you know, obviously it's getting hot, you know, and it can cause, you know, it causes other problems. And of course, anytime something like that generates heat, it's wasting electricity as well. So anyway, got that sort of settled, taken care of, and that was that. So it was a good thing, as I said, it was a good thing that I made it home late Friday afternoon, or I could have potentially had a mess on my hands with the refrigerator. So I left, it was kind of slow getting around this morning. So it was pretty much noon by the time I was able to grab something to eat and then get out of there, get going. Of course, I ended up hitting Dallas kind of at the wrong time. Because it was pretty much rush hour was underway by the time I made it to Dallas. So it took probably a good hour or so, or maybe a little more, to kind of drive through Dallas, and you know, all, with all of the trying to avoid slowdowns, and then some of the slowdowns obviously are unavoidable, and so it took a while to get through there. And so I made it here to Waco. I never really noticed the time. It was probably upwards of 7 o'clock by the time I made it here. And so I it was kind of course I you know whenever I get a motel room, typically I you know and I know that I'm going to be getting it ahead of time, it's really always, I've found, a really good idea to go on to one of the booking sites. Like, there's hotels.com. Another one is booking.com. There's a bunch of different ones. So I went to hotels.com to reserve the hotel room down in South Texas, and so I ended up getting it for a total of 8 days. And I think last year at Harlingen, Texas, I stayed at the there's a Super 8, and I'm thinking I either paid $42 or $47 per night last year, and I thought that was a good deal. Well, you know, and I was prepared to do that this time, but I was looking at the hotels.com, and I kept scrolling kind of back and forth, and kind of buried down in there, there was a WoodSpring Suites in Harlingen, Texas, that $32 per night. And so, you know, and it's not going to be the fanciest place in the world. It has it says it's, you know, as far as the rating goes, where people have actually rated it, they said it was good. And, you know, the pictures of it look good. So $32 a night, 8 nights, even with the tax, it ended up being like $302 for the 8 nights that I booked it for, starting tomorrow night, starting Thursday evening. So that worked out pretty well. And then, so this morning before I left, I decided I would go ahead and book a motel for tonight here at Waco, Texas. Waco is about halfway between where I live at in Arkansas and where I'm headed to, down in, you know, down near Harlingen, Texas. So the you know, so I booked, you know, I start, so I went, I looked at hotels.com again, and I, you know, didn't really see any low prices. You know, the prices vary. I think hotels.com, the impression I'm getting, they tend to kind of push the higher prices, or maybe bury the lowest prices. So you really, they're there, but you kind of have to look. So I looked at, I ended up going to booking.com, and I found, you know, and I was looking, and the prices were, you know, 50, or, you know, the, like, 50 was 50, and then like 60 and on up, upwards of $100 a night. And then all of a sudden I saw one that was $36, or was it 30? Yeah, it was $36. So, was able to book it, and it's right along Interstate 35, you know, near the, all, you know, there's, you know, you get to Waco, Texas, and there's hotels kind of spread out all along Interstate 35, and so this one was right here, and it was $36 a night, and it, you know, it said it was good as far as the ratings go, and so I made it here and checked in, and it, you know, it's decent so far. You know, everything looks, you know, pretty clean, and so I got a room with a king size bed, and you know, it's nothing fancy, but the plumbing seems to work, and all the lights seem to work, and the heater, you know, the heat seems to work, and got it set on 73 degrees right now, so. pretty happy with it, and might as well save a few dollars, you know, because it's been my experience that you pay for, sometimes you pay more and you don't necessarily get anything more, because all I really need is a room with a good bed and functional plumbing and etc., you know. So, and it's, you know, but there are a lot of, the moral of the story is a lot of hotels, motels they're using services like booking.com and hotels.com and others. I think Priceline might be another one. What they're doing by offering, you know, relatively, you know, pretty inexpensive rates, what they're doing is attempting to keep their occupancy rate as high as possible, because they have ongoing expenses that they have to be met. And so if they can keep the, you know, when during a slow time, they want to keep the occupancy rate up as high as possible, even though they may have to take a cut in their rate during slow times, they have to do it. Now, of course, they still have people that would show up and just how much is a room, you know, and they're not booking online. There's plenty of people that probably still do that, and those folks are paying, no doubt, are paying a higher rate than I am. So, but usually, whenever I get a room, it's always best to book it online if possible, and you're probably going to get a better rate. And it depends on the time of year, because the time of year makes a gigantic difference. And it seems that during December, for whatever reason, you'd think, well, there'd be a lot of people traveling and staying in motels and hotels, but doesn't really seem to be the case. And then it kind of depends on the type. Now, the WoodSpring Suites that I booked the 8 nights in and down in Harlingen, Texas, that is one of the, it's kind of an extended stay type place that has, they've got little, I guess, kitchenettes and what have you in the rooms. And that is kind of aimed more at sort of corporate type thing, you know, where, or let's say contractors that are coming to the area to do a temporary job, you know, the guys may be there a week or two or whatever, and then the company pays for their room and what have you, and then they're off, you know, eventually the job's done and then they go on somewhere else. So you have WoodSpring Suites, I think, is kind of catering to that. And then there's also another one, a chain called Value Place that has various locations across the country, and those are typically, you know, they're somewhat less expensive, and they're sort of aimed at workers, have to have a place to stay while they're working in the area. And it's been my experience that those are fine. They're not going to be the fanciest in the world. They've got the basics, and that's, at the end of the day, that's all you really need. It's all I really need. I don't need the fancy name or the free, so-called free breakfasts. Because, even before I drop the carbohydrates from my diet, I would never, virtually never, eat the free breakfast. But people think, oh my God, it's free. No, it isn't. You're paying for it. It's not free. So, but I don't know. You bandy the word free about, and it's a strange switch that ends up getting flipped in people's minds. And then, it's really weird how that works. But, there's nothing free. You're paying for it. Sorry. So, in any case, and you're probably, and there's probably a profit involved too. So, and you're getting a really crappy, cheap breakfast, because typically those free breakfasts are, you get some bacon and you get some nasty waffles and nasty, sugary cereal and maybe sweet rolls and just a bunch, bunch of carbohydrates, juice, orange juice, just, you might as well just buy a bag of sugar. You know, just start eating, spooning away. Eat it. Eat the sugar raw. Might as well. Same difference. So speaking of the low carbohydrates, a little over a year ago now, I dropped the pasta, potatoes, rice, and bread, and so far I've lost, it seems to have stabilized pretty much at 30 pounds, so I started out around 185, and that would sometimes, it would go up, but it was, kind of around 185 is where I started at, and now I'm, when I weighed this morning, actually, for the first time, I weighed this morning with no clothes on 154. What was it? Well, like 154 point. It was either 6 or 8. Maybe it was 154.8. So that's the first time I've actually dropped below the 155. Because before that I was at last time I was home and I weighed. I'll weigh every morning when I'm home. I don't take the scale with me in the truck. And the last time, I think the lowest it said was like 155.0. So the weight loss may or may not be continuing so slowly. And I really don't care. That, there's still some fat around my middle, and I expect that to never go away. There's just some fat that's been there forever, and that's probably the hardest fat to get rid of, right around your midsection. It's not a whole lot, but it's still there, and so it conceivably that could slowly go away over time, some of it, because you're always going to have, everyone has a certain amount of fat in their body, and that's just the way the body is designed, and the fat actually performs several functions, and maybe some of the functions they're just kind of now learning about. The fat actually, there's different types of fat, and they found that some of those different types of fat actually have performed functions other than just being fat. So, you can't completely get rid of your fat, and nor should you, really should you want to, or at least should I want to. Maybe some people try to, or athletes or whatever, but, in any case, I'm happy with 155, because it seems to be fluctuating between 155 and 157. Regardless, sometimes I eat more, sometimes I eat less, but, and I'm eating everything except pasta, potatoes, rice, and bread, and of course any kind of desserts or sugary drinks or cakes, cookies, candies, anything like that, which are blatantly sugar. They just metabolize right to glucose. Whether you like it or not, that's what they metabolize to. So it's best to keep that down. What people are doing with eating the wrong, eating the bad carbohydrates, all you're doing is if you imagine you've got a set of gears that are running perfectly. Let's say you take a watch, a mechanical watch apart, and you're looking at it, and it's just, everything's precise, and it's operating just fine. What you're doing is sticking a screwdriver in it. Basically, that's kind of, what you're doing with carbohydrates. Because it's, the pasta, potatoes, rice, and bread in particular, plus all the candies, cakes, cookies, etc., what that does, you can try counting calories all day long, but what it's doing is throwing a monkey wrench into your metabolism, because it ends up, those foods end up, any food that ends up really spiking your insulin level ends up spiking, you know, because of the glucose, you know, the you're eating too much stuff that converts to glucose, that spikes your insulin level, and insulin causes all kinds of problems. It causes your the fat to store, to get the glucose out of the blood and to store the, you know, to converts it to fat. The excess glucose gets converted to fat. And as long as you've got high glucose levels, and of course most, you know, a lot of people do because they're just constantly eating pasta, potatoes, rice, and bread, and cakes, and cookies, and candies, and, you know, you name it, and their juices, and all this stuff. With high insulin, chronically high insulin levels, you end up with more and more fat. You can never really burn the fat, and because the high insulin level kind of keeps it locked in, keeps the fat, you know, kind of the fat locked into the fat cells. You can never really use it as fuel, and, you know, and it's really there. One of the functions is sort of reserve fuel, and, you know, of course, it's just locked away. You can't use it. And the carbohydrates, of course, screw up your satiation mechanism. It tells you that, you know, that would normally tell you that you're full. And, you know, and so you're eating all your carbohydrates and you're hungry all the time and you're fat as a barn. And then you think, oh, I can't control my eating. Well, no, you just cut out the pasta, potatoes, rice, and bread, and in particular, and all the sweets. And you'd probably be shocked at what the result would be. And, you know, so I'm not starving. I eat plenty. Typically, I'm eating twice a day. Once in a while, I'll have a, you know, little snack. Like what I did today, since I was kind of slow getting around, I stopped at the supermarket before I got on the interstate. The supermarket's about half, you know, 2.5 miles from my house. Stopped at the supermarket. They've got a deli in there, and so I got three fried chicken legs. By them, you know, just by themselves, and they got a little seating area where you can sit down. So I sat down and you know, paid for the chicken legs and sat down and ate them, and was on my way. And then when I, you know, I stopped the first time to get fuel, I was at Stringtown, Oklahoma, where I stopped at, and filled the car up with gas. And so I went inside, and They happened to have some mozzarella cheese sticks. Maybe there was a couple of different types of cheese, but they were little cheese sticks, about maybe 3 inches long. So I got three of those, and I ended up having that as a snack. And then this evening, after I checked into the hotel here, then I went ahead and went to a Denny's and got a T-bone steak, and so that's what I had for supper tonight. You know, T-bone steak, and then the with the broccoli and a salad with the ranch dressing. So that's what I had for supper. And I've not really, very seldom do I feel like I'm really hungry. I'll feel little twinges of hunger. Maybe this morning I felt a little bit, little twinge, and but hardly at all. Whereas before, if I would go that long without eating, let's say overnight, and then you know clear up till noon, because it, you know, the night before it was I don't know, it was probably about around 8 o'clock whenever I ate last night, and then I went all the way to, you know, from 8 o'clock to noon. Today, when I had the chicken legs, and I was a little hungry, maybe, but before, when I was eating all of the carbohydrates, you know, I would probably have gotten to the point where I, you know, really would feel intense hunger. And you know, there were times where, like, I was waiting, you know, like at a family dinner, you know, because sometimes those family dinners can get delayed, you know, like till, you know, it's supposed to happen at such and such time, and they end up being a few hours later. There were, you know, and you know you're going to eat a big meal, then there were times where I would just have to eat something because it just felt terrible, you know. just really intense hunger and needed to eat something just to kind of stave that off a little bit. So, but that doesn't happen anymore. And then the other thing, of course, my energy levels stay pretty well consistent. Don't really ever feel tired during the day. Don't ever really feel, unless I've messed my sleep up. Now that can cause it, but even at that, it's nothing like it used to be. And I never have the sugar crashes. You know, like, of course, I'm not, you know, I didn't do it very often, but I would, in the middle of the day, I might break down and go into a, you know, like a Wendy's or a McDonald's or something and get a thing of, you know, like a or Burger King or wherever and get a shake, like a vanilla shake. Then about 2 hours later, I'd feel like crap, you know, like it. A sugar crash, because what causes a sugar crash, you eat a bunch of, you know, sugary whatever, ice cream or whatever, and because that's just all sugar basically, shake or whatever, malt, get all that sugar in your system and it gets dumped right into your bloodstream, and then pancreas ends up overshooting to get rid of the, produces, you know, a big burst of insulin, relatively speaking, and that ends up kind of causing it to overshoot, and then your sugar level ends up going below, you know, lower than what it should be, and then you kind of feel like, I'm really lethargic and tired, I need to take a nap. Well, no, you just screwed up your, you just stuck a screwdriver into your hormone system. You know, you stuck a screwdriver into your body's functions, you know. You know, and of course, your body is horrifically complicated. You know, it's way more complicated, you know. And of course, that's, you're locked out of that. As a conscious creature, you're locked out of that system. You can't, you know, with good reason, because you couldn't try to consciously make, you know, remember to make your heart beat or, you know, you have all these different, you know, and your endocrine system, you know, is releasing all these different hormones and varying levels. And it typically, if you kind of let it alone and you eat the right stuff, it sort of works like, you know, a well-oiled machine. You know, but eat the wrong foods and it really messes things up. So, and there's a lot of people that have messed up, certainly they've messed up their hormones, their endocrine system, you know, and you can tell by look how fat they are. And it's not because they, you know, they're eating too many calories. It's because they're eating the wrong stuff. So, but, it has, you know, I am really impressed with, you know, having lost the 30 pounds and it stays off. I don't even have to do anything but just, you know, just eat whatever I want to eat as long as it's not pasta, potatoes, rice, bread, or sweets. You know, everything else is kind of fair game. And sometimes I eat more, sometimes I eat a little less, but... you know, the weight is maintaining itself perfectly. I feel a lot better. My energy levels are really steady. I had the problem on my heels, the heels of my feet. That's almost completely gone at this point. I think it was the grains that were causing that. You know, and I'd been plagued with that for several years. And then, you know, the only thing that's changed is my diet, you know, and I think it was the grains and the pasta and the bread that was doing it. So that was causing that problem. So in any case, that's almost completely healed up, not giving me any trouble. Just overall, I can't say enough good things about what this diet has done. No more acid reflux. That's huge. So I'm pretty happy with it and have no intention whatsoever of, you know, kind of going back, not even tempted to go back at all. So Anyhow, I still know what's going on news-wise. I really am not paying much attention to headlines. I still kind of know what's going on, and I, you know, when I was eating this evening, you know, Donald Trump's been impeached. You know, the House impeached Donald Trump. Well, poop-de-doo. The Senate's not going to remove him. You know, and if the Senate does, there's probably going to be a civil war, but I don't think the Senate is going to remove Trump from office. And we may end up, I don't think there's going to be a civil war. However, I do think that at some point there may be civil unrest. Because even now, I still believe that there's going to be, you know, the so-called deep state, and there's been plenty of people that have committed terrible crimes against, so-called deep state, what have you, trying to remove Trump from office. So, and spying on him and what have you, even as a candidate. I think some of them are going to go to jail. You know, they're going to get arrested, they're going to get perp walked, and they're going to, you know, they're going to go to trial, and if that doesn't happen, then our country's gone. But I think it's going to happen, and I think there may or may not be some civil unrest. You know, and kind of particularly in certain, you know, like coastal cities or whatever, you know, what have you, that's where the potential for that is. And, the problem really is once people lose their minds, what happens then? You know, do you still have to kind of live with them, you know? And that's a problem, you know, because typically, like, if someone really goes off the deep end in a family, you know, the family may or may not be able to kind of reconcile, and oftentimes they don't. And so I don't know what happens, politically. I don't know what happens, you know, because you've got a fair number of people that have lost their minds. They really have. You know, I'm not just saying that so that, you know, you can laugh and say funny ha-ha. There are a fair number of people, you know, that have lost their minds, and maybe they don't even realize it. You know, certainly, you know, the person that's lost their mind, you know, they don't think they're crazy. They think, you know, everybody else is crazy. It's not them. So, I don't know what happens with that. But I do think that there's gonna be people that eventually go to jail, you know, and I think that there are, Trump will be reelected. I think that's, you know, and I think, you know, there's probably a good chance that the Democrat Party has committed suicide, and it probably is going to end up being just utterly obliterated. You know, and they're probably going to have to come up with the, you know, like a replacement party. So we'll see how that works. It's hard to say, but it's best at this point to just do not argue with people. You know, if somebody is on, you know, arguing the other point, just, you know, it's best just to shut them down and do not argue with them. Do not try to talk. You'll never change their mind. You know, but these people, especially if they're emotional, that they are that's a sign of ideological possession, and that's and the term possession, you know, you think, oh, it's like The Exorcist, you know, the Linda Blair character. It really is. There is a strong element of that. They are possessed. You know, it's possible for anybody to be, you know, to varying degrees, ideologically possessed. And, of course, if you're ideologically possessed, you're not really aware. It's kind of like resentment. Resentment comes packaged with its own denial mechanism. And so if you're ideologically possessed, there's a good chance that you can't even recognize it yourself. Let's say someone tries to present the truth to you or reason with you, and you just kind of go off the deep end and you're triggered, you know, and that's another thing. You know, people say, well, I'm triggered. Well, that's just a sign that you're insane and you're ideologically possessed, and you're not your own person. So it's best just, you can't argue with these people. You can't discuss with them because they have lost the ability to reason. You know, when I was in the Denny's tonight, there's this black guy waited on me, and he brought the steak. Oh, I'll see if I can find you a steak knife, and I'll get you some more tea. So he departed, and and I saw him for a minute or more. I saw him. They had a television on there, and they had it tuned to Fox News, and they were talking about the president being impeached. And he was standing there talking to some old guy, you know, and they were looking at glued to the TV. And then, you know, he's there for about a minute or two, and then he finally came back with the steak knife and the drink, with the unsweet iced tea refill, and he said, sorry, I was watching the TV. I was just kind of temporary, he was excited by what was on the TV, and that was his word, excited. So that probably tells me that he was, you know, hated, you know, probably a Trump hater, but what I didn't say anything about that. What I did say to him, I told him to keep those things turned off, especially, you know, any kind of news, I keep it turned off. And I proceeded to tell him that, what I just said, that it's a really good idea to not try to argue with people. You know, family and friends, it's a terrible mistake because you're never going to convince them, and all you risk ruining relationships. And it's just, that's not worth it. You don't want to go there. And besides that, by, you know, cutting, you know, stopping yourself from, you know, stopping any kind of discussion like that, especially if you know that people are on the other side, you're limiting your own temptation to kind of become emotional, along with the temptation for them to become emotional. And by arguing, all you're really doing is encouraging them to become emotional. You're encouraging the insanity in both them and within yourself. You know, it's so much better if you can, you know, if you can find somebody, and there are people. I do have people that I friends and what have you, that I once in a while I'll get into a good discussion with. And you can always tell if there's a good discussion, even if they don't necessarily agree with everything you say. When you're having a good discussion, you can listen to the other person's point of view, and you can listen to what they have to say, and you can tell that they're not ideologically possessed, because you can, you know, there are certain, you know, one of the telltale signs when someone's ideologically possessed is that they become too emotional. That's one of the signs. And another is the axioms that they have. You know, maybe they've got a set of five or six axioms that, you know, if this, sort of like an if this, then that statement, you know, if, you know, and, you know, it's kind of a knee-jerk trigger type of thing that, you know, and they're able to use those axioms to sort of see the world in a certain way, and everything revolves around those, you know, it's almost like an algorithm, you know, with maybe five or six if then that statements in it, and they see the world, you know, everything's filtered through that, and you cannot argue with them, and you can tell that, and but you can also tell when you're having a genuine, really interesting discussion with someone else, even, you know, two people never agree about everything. But if you're having a genuine discussion, that, you know, then you can see, you know, the axioms aren't present. And then you can really have a deep discussion. You know, a discussion that can end up being very meaningful, a meaningful discussion. And when those things happen, it's wonderful. When you have a genuine discussion like that, even if you don't agree with the other person. But so, you know, and those kinds of discussions are really great, because it causes you, both of you, to sort of really think about things and sort of tap into something, you know, other than you know, just the, you know, just these axioms that people have, you know, they've got their axe to grind. That's where they probably, where that comes from, where that saying comes from. So, you know, so it's best just to shut them, you know, cut that off. Don't get involved with it, you know. And if the people that are going to be upset, the people that are going to, you know, do whatever it is that they do, become emotional, and they've lost, you know, lose their minds, let them do it. But, you know, otherwise, just shut them off or just get away from them. But otherwise, do not engage with them, because it's a terrible mistake. You're never going to argue them away from their axioms. The only thing that can, you know, some people, you know, as I've said many times before, you know, people can end up in the gutter, either literally or figuratively. And at some point, they may, you know, some of those people can suddenly start thinking rationally, and, you know, the axioms, they see that the axioms have sort of failed them. They've tried this, they've tried that, all of that's failed, and then they begin to face the, you know, they begin to see things, you know, they sort of face their conscience, in a sense. Because when, you know, you have a deep discussion, you're basically, if you've made friends with your conscience, beyond that, then you can kind of tap into that, whatever that is. You know, it may sound cliche, I think you're kind of tapping into the mind of God. But you can kind of tap into that, and then you have the ability to really think and really reason. Especially if you're having a discussion, a genuine discussion. But otherwise, people are trapped in their acts, you know, in their axioms, and you know that you can, they can't, you know, they just can't break free of it. They have to kind of crash to the bottom, and then then the axioms can, you know, they see them for, eventually they might see the axioms for what they are. But they'll never do it as long as, especially if someone is kind of arguing the other side and everyone's all emotional. You know, you're never going to, when you become emotional like that, it simply energizes the axioms. You know, you got the knee-jerk reactions, and you know, as long as that's energized, it's kind of like it would be similar to the, you know, in the presence of high insulin levels, you know, the fat gets stored and it can never come out. So I don't think that the impeachment thing's going anywhere. I think it's just, it was probably, the Democrats I think they've really kind of they've really managed to destroy themselves. I think the party now has committed suicide, and so I think we'll see what happens. So anyhow, we've been going here for 55 minutes, probably about time for me to cut this off, get it uploaded, get headed to bed so I can get up in the morning. Hope everyone is having a great week, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.